Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. How are you getting along during Chicago's deep freeze? Now, Mike Scott said a little bit more moderate today. My reading on my finely engineered German sedan.
Oh, yes.
Was minus 18 when we started the show yesterday when I pulled in.
Yeah, mine was minus 19. But yeah, what was it today?
24.
Yeah, well, what was he saying? That it was 20, minus 21 right now.
Well, minus 20 at O'Hare.
Mine stops at 20. So it will not go below 20.
And it will not go faster than 20 miles an hour.
No, and I got the hee-ho from the left lane today. People are honking because I'm driving the monster truck. And the wheels must be frozen, or there must be ice encased, because I can't control the vehicle. It's like you've got to have both hands on the wheel. It's a novel
approach to driving.
But I want you to know, I cheated on you yesterday. I did a phoner with the Salem station in Boston.
Oh, to talk about the weather?
Yeah, I know. I know you'd be upset. I hope I wasn't stepping on your toes.
Did you do a Dean, that chimpanzee that's on the morning show, Dean Richards? Did you do that where you had, hey, I've got a frozen banana. I'm going to try and pound a nail into a piece of wood. Oh, wait, that didn't work.
Wait,
hold on. Hold on, Boston. I'm going outside to blow bubbles to see if they freeze in midair.
And I've got this helium balloon.
Because I'm a dope.
Well, actually, what we did do was, because we're bored and you can only play so much Fortnite and you can buy only so many new skins for your weapons and for your person, that we took a wet T-shirt and put it outside, and within 5 seconds, it was completely frozen.
Who was in it?
Nobody was in it.
Oh.
Yeah, which child wants to put the T-shirt?
No, thought it was maybe like a contest the winner went outside or something.
No. But in International Falls, Minnesota, they did still run the ultra marathon, which is 52 miles. And people finished, and the wind chill was minus 51.
I'm kind of getting used to it. It was 20 yesterday, minus 20 or so yesterday. Minus 24 today, I go outside, I'm like, it's a little nippy.
It's not windy out. It's not as windy as it has been. Cat update.
Oh, yeah, I was reading in-depth about what you're supposed to do with the 200,000 feral cats in Chicago. I don't know how they know there's 200,000, but okay, we'll take them at their word.
No, because they hand them out. I mean, they give
them. They hand out feral cats?
Yeah, because they're going to put them down. They're going to euthanize them. So crazy cat people like myself, we go to places called cat community, and then there's a humane society, and they hand you cats that they're going to put down, and you have to have a colony of them. Three or more you're supposed to have, and then they kill rats, and in exchange you give them a little igloo to sleep in, and you give them water and dry food. But that's the only thing that kills rats in our neighborhood. You don't know, we had a horrible rat problem, but we don't now because of Crazy Junior and Marshfield.
So there's so much to unpack with that little riff, but let me just start with, so we have 200,000 feral cats in captivity that are handed out to Chicago residents to be released so that during deathly cold weather, we can try and provide for the cats that we released into the wild in the city.
Well, because this is historic. I mean, what we're having right now. We'll never see temperatures like this in our lifetime.
Well, what are you talking about?
This is
not even the coldest day in Chicago history. That was 85.
Yeah, that was, minus 27?
You were in your, late
40s? I was a self-absorbed high schooler at that time. Thank you. Late 40s. No, I was in high school.
So by definition, it's not once in a lifetime.
Well,
it's happened twice, not three times.
Right,
two days
I'm saying cats, I mean, normally this is, cats' lifespan isn't from 1985 to 2019.
Morris,
I mean,
the cat.
How long did he live? 18 years. Okay, get your
20?
Cat. 20? No.
Didn't he make 20?
No.
How long did Morris the cat, does anybody know how long Morris the cat lived, the great cat spokesman feline supermodel, really.
It really was. He did the catwalk like nobody else.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
He actually tied when he was 19.
Oh, you looked it up? Or somebody did?
How old
was
he?
The difference?
You can speak, Justin.
He was 19.
Oh, I went over, so I don't win the showcase. You can't go over in the showcase showdown.
Yeah, so I won.
Okay, so.
But anyway, yeah, so they want us to. Well, will you tell us what they want us to do?
Well,
I've been trying to take my cats inside. I tried again yesterday, and they're going to rip my eye out.
Mm hmm. Is that them? Is that live audio?
Yeah. Find it on Twitter.
So, I mean, I don't know how to comport my life. I don't know how to survive, not in the wild, without the Chicago press corps and Chicago politicians telling me what to do in circumstances like this. You know, bundle up, layers, those sorts of important observations. Leave out dry food because wet food freezes.
I have that covered.
Yeah, this is from CBS News. So wet freezes in sub-zero.
Well, yeah.
Bring the cat into a warm room in your house.
Okay. See, now, you know what that is? That's guilt shaming right there. Because I've tried 3 days in a row, unsuccessfully.
Oh, boy.
And that pisses me off.
Really set you off.
They're feral cats for a reason. They don't want to be in your house.
Make it.
That's the noises. I'm not kidding you. Marshfield was PO'd yesterday when I tried to get her down from the rafters. She wouldn't even take tuna.
That cat is saying, bring me into a warm room in your home.
No,
that's
saying, back off, biatch.
Well, make a well-insulated waterproof shelter with minimal airspace to maximize warmth.
Did that. I have that.
If you're using a cardboard box, cut a 5 to 6 inch wide hole in the box to create an entrance and line the bottom with material like styrofoam, garbage bags, plentiful
straw.
Amounts of straw.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, look at you.
I have two igloos.
You can also buy microwavable surfaces for pets called Snuggle Safe Discs at PetSmart.
I have two of those, but in this weather, they're not working, Dan.
Oh, all right. Well,
this is very serious
stuff. This is great that we're bumping up the advice against a real-world example of somebody who's a lunatic. Buy a prefabricated insulated shelter from Treehouse.
Did that. I have two of them.
That's where you and the other feline colonists go to get your...
Yeah. Have you ever been to the Treehouse?
No.
Oh, it's so sweet. It's very
Bring the
soothing.
Cat to a shelter, but only if it's a stray.
Oh, they're shaming. Shaming. That's shaming me again. That's making me feel bad.
And then, that's basically it. Chicago's Anti-Cruelty Society said it still had room to take in dogs and cats at risk from the cold.
So what about a raccoon
why don't you just
family
bring them
of
there?
Five?
Yeah, bring your, you know, feral raccoons. Are there domesticated raccoons? I don't know. All right. And if you see a pet outside in the cold, call your local police department.
Yeah, right. Really? The cops are going to help me out? Should I have called them? Like, my cat won't come in the house. You need to help me, please. Help
I saw something I think nicely sums up the Chicago culture of brotherly love.
Yeah.
It was on one of the Twitter feeds that follows the police scanner. Woman sees homeless man and dog outside, is concerned about the dog. Larry in Carroll Stream in Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. Amy, I've been fascinated following your story with the cats and the raccoons. I'm just wondering, have you done your civic duty and got them registered to vote a few times in the upcoming primary?
A lot of Valis voters. Thanks.
I should.
Larry. Yeah, a lot of potential Valis voters.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook or read about it in the paper. Hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So the good news is by the end of today, we're back in the black.
Well,
high at 1 degree.
Oh, that's great. But it's still, I mean, again, you have to cover your skin. I know you...
And then by
laugh at this.
Yeah, well, it's because it's laughable.
It's like stinging. It's like having a needle into your skin.
Oh, it's brutal, man. This is the worst I've ever seen.
Can't even see out of your glasses.
I mean, who the hell are these people?
These are Chicagoans who are hardy, who thought it would be fun to walk along the lakefront yesterday because steam was rising from the lake. You cannot go outside at all. I had a Peyton start the car every 4 hours, you know, and he'd run out like a idiot. Sorry, but. Without his hat and gloves on. Like, what are you doing? And they come back in. He's like, oh, my God, my hands are frozen. It hurts. I said, well, yeah. I told you to wear gloves. You got to learn the hard way.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well, it's a survival of the fittest. Not everybody's going to make it. You know, I'm willing to leave some people behind. Oh, not everybody can be saved.
Oh.
If you can't figure this out, then I'm just not willing to go back for you. I'm not willing to go as back far back as I need to bring you up to speed what to do if things feel a little cold to you.
But have you noticed, though, that men are the dumb ones who don't wear hats and gloves?
You definitely don't want to be out here too long. You, my ears are frozen right now.
You know why your ears are frozen? Because you don't have a hat on.
It's fascinating to hear from people, Chicago like, dumbasses, random Chicago dumbasses. I mean, but
it's called MOS, Man on the Street.
Yeah, and this is called not a network affiliate newscast because this show is not for sub-room temperature IQs. That's what the network affiliate newscasts are for. So if I want to find out what the latest residential kitchen fire, where that occurred, what the latest crack up on the Dan Ryan is, if I want to hear from, you know,
what about
Dumas's on the street about the cold, then I'll watch ABC, NBC, right, CBS,
well,
or Fox.
What about the family in Wheeling?
Or Dean Richards.
What about the family in Wheeling who thought they were trying to heat their house yesterday? They bought their charcoal grill in their house and set that little baby up and started... Well, to warm their house, you can't do that. They 9 of them had to go to the hospital with carbon monoxide.
You can do it.
Poison.
They did do it.
That
had happened. So you can do that. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Hey, a lot of different ideas out there. Some people are going to build a better mousetrap than others.
Uh huh.
Some people are going to be killed by the mousetrap they build.
Yeah. They almost died, and thank God they're still alive.
Oh, thank God.
Well, I mean.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. I think you need to go to
things, I've never heard of a charcoal.
Go to Amundsen High School and see who's not wearing a coat into the school.
Yeah,
well, every high school.
It's not your boys. It's the girls that are wearing their fleeces and their hoodies in with leggings and shoes with no socks into school.
Yeah, and the
everywhere, not just Amundsen, but these high schools.
Oh, it's just come on,
invincible.
And
come
unfortunately, on, unfortunately, Mike, the boys at Allman Brothers are wearing meggings. That's the sad part.
That's a whole separate problem.
Yeah. That has nothing to do with the weather.
No.
But it is a problem.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. The entrance of billionaire Howard Schultz into the 2020 presidential race, the possible entrance, the open contemplation that he will run as independent candidate has really fueled the politics of net worth envy.
I'd like to say the Democrats have their panties in a bunch over this one.
He was on with Morning Joe.
Oh.
Talking a little bit about the punitive measures that are being introduced by some of his, former fellow travelers. He no longer identifies as a member of the Democrat Party, but Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris and the other Democrat socialists do. And here's Schultz talking a little bit about that.
I'm not a Democrat. I don't affiliate myself with the Democratic Party, who's so far left, who basically wants the government to take over health care, which we cannot afford, the government to give free college to everybody, and the government to give everyone a job, which basically is $40 trillion on the balance sheet of $21.5 trillion. Can't afford it. What can we do? What we need is comprehensive tax reform. What we need is sensible solutions to immigration. All of these things cannot happen under the current environment. Now, I've also been criticized for being a billionaire. Let's talk about that. I'm self-made. I grew up in the projects in Brooklyn, New York. I thought that was the American dream, the aspiration of America. You're going to criticize me for being successful when in my company over the last 30 years, the only company in America that gave comprehensive health insurance, equity in the form of stock options, and free college tuition, and Elizabeth Warren wants to criticize me for being successful? No.
He's kind of growing on me.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Problem is, of course, that Howard Schultz only partially believes in theory what he does in practice. He's a billionaire because he practiced capitalism. In theory, he's left. Just because he's not a Democrat socialist, just because he doesn't want to nationalize, formally nationalize the health insurance industry and healthcare services. He supports maintaining Obamacare, which is just a backdoor government takeover of health insurance. So this is the problem with the champagne socialist like a Howard Schultz. Yeah, I'm a capitalist in practice, and I'm not going to go as far as fast as Elizabeth Warren or Kamala Harris. But I'm still going to get there. I'm just going to go at a slightly slower gait. And that's the problem. So that you pay homage to entrepreneurial capitalism, and at the same time, you pursue policies that expand the government and contract opportunities for entrepreneurial capitalism. So that's the sort of two-step the left has been doing for a long time. And now Howard Schultz is aghast to find out that certain candidates in the party to which he formerly affiliated have just stripped away the pretense, because there's been enough intellectual damage done to enough generations where you can actually run as a socialist and win the presidency in this country. Or at least that's going to be put to the test in 2020. So, you know, Howard Schultz is partially right, and a major part of the problem, a major part of the reason that we are in this place, as is Bloomberg and so many others who made their way, self-made man, as he said, that's true, and then want to cut the bridge behind him. Nobody else can cross except as I say so and how and when I say so. I made my way and made my fortune through productive risk-taking and busting my ass. And the lesson is, I'm not going to allow you to do the same. And I'm going to make excuses when you, I'm not going to allow you to do the same with respect to productive risk taking. I'm going to erect barriers, not drop bridges. And I'm going to make excuses when you don't bust your ass to take from those who are to give to you. That's Howard Schultz. So, you know, take his attacks on Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris and the rest of them in the proper context. Yeah, it's great that he's pointing out this distinction. It's great that he's telling the truth about Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris. He's not telling the truth about himself. And that's the problem I have.
Well, it seems he spends a lot of time on the road, because he had a town hall at Iowa State after that. It seems he's spending a lot of time explaining why he's running as an independent.
What you're going to do is you're going to have us have another 4 years of President Trump. Please explain to me why you feel you can't run as a Democrat.
The Democratic Party today has moved so far to the left.
And pretty much the same solid answer that he's been giving at all of these town halls.
You know, let me tell you something, and this is about Howard Schultz. You heard this all the time. You hear this all the time at the state and local level, too. You know, you can't run because you're just going to throw the race to this person or that person. You can't primary this person because you're just going to weaken the candidate who's going to win, and then you're going to help the Democrats, so on and so forth. You know what? I don't begrudge Howard Schultz this. I don't begrudge Howard Schultz running, even if he was unbalanced, going to potentially hurt Trump, which I think is highly unlikely, of course. But even if that were the case, hey, if you think that you've got the best ideas, if you're willing to run the gauntlet, who is anybody to say you should step aside because this person should be insulated from competition? The hell with that. Somebody wants to primary Trump? Go ahead, primary Trump. Larry Hogan, Governor of Maryland, you want to primary Trump? Go ahead, primary him. Mitt Romney? Go ahead. Kasich? You want to leave CNN? Stop flying in first class and primary Trump? Go ahead. I don't care. I mean, the idea, you're not allowed to because the way I handicap the race, I don't like the outcome. The hell with that.
Yep.
If you believe in competition, as you're supposed to, as a free market type person, as I am, then you believe in political competition, too. Why would I trust anybody or a group of people to have the secret knowledge about political outcomes any more than I do economic outcomes? And oh, by the way, how many people had the secret knowledge about the outcome of the 2016 Republican primary from the get-go. Certainly I didn't.
I didn't.
Very few people did.
Yeah.
So you know, Howard Schultz, I hope he pushes back on that question he keeps getting popped with from, you know, dopes at these town halls and then dopes on these cable and network news shows that just obsess about the political handicapping, that just obsess about outcomes. And they have no interest, very little interest, and even less understanding of the important distinctions in policy. Mike in Union, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning. You know, they keep talking about maybe he's going to pick off votes from the Democrats. I'm a little worried about the chicken littles on the Republican side, like the Kasichs and everybody else, that he might possibly pick off some Trump votes.
Could.
It's great what he says, you know, when the soundbite you played, and, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, good, great. But, I'm a little worried about the chicken littles we got, Dan. Comment on that.
Well, okay. Thanks for the call, Mike. My comment is if Mitt Romney wants to vote for Howard Schultz over Trump, I don't know. Okay. I mean, it's the job of the candidate and the campaign to make the case, to put together the coalition. Like, you can't run because you might take votes away from Trump? No. But I would suggest that, you know, the net of it, my handicapping, the net of it is Howard Schultz or Michael Bloomberg are going to take many more votes away from the left because... So the socialist, ostensibly the socialist nominee for president, because that's the way it's tracking, because there's just more of a mission field for them on the left than there is on the sort of squishy center right. I mean, Trump is still enjoying 80% plus approval in most states from Republicans. So it's a steep hill to climb. But hey, somebody wants to take a shot. You know, for all the, all the Reagan's 11th commandment, thou shalt not speak ill of a fellow Republican. Right. Yeah. Invoked all the time by incumbents who don't want to be primaried.
Well, a lot of them.
And excuse me. That's also the author of that 11th commandment ran against Gerald Ford in a sitting president in a primary. Right. Ronald Reagan did that.
But did he speak ill will of Gerald Ford?
Well,
running against him.
By definition of running, you're saying I'm better qualified for the position than you are. I mean,
well, a lot of people at that Iowa State town hall were saying, you're just Ralph Nader. You're Ralph. Because, you know, in 2000, he took 97,000 votes in Florida away from Al Gore.
He's the anti-Ralph Nader. And you know what? This is the same spoiled sport whining from Republicans about Ross Perot in 92.
Yeah, same.
Right. So could Howard Schultz be to Trump what Ross Perot was to Clinton in 92? Possibly. Long shot. I mean, Howard Schultz has a long way to go to actually be a material player in the race. But so what? Why shouldn't anybody who wants to run be allowed to try? And if they're such a joke as a candidate, as an alternative to Trump or to the socialists the Democrats nominate, then what are you worried about? And if there's enough people that would vote for someone you think is a joke that would drive an outcome that you don't like, then maybe you don't quite have a handle on what's going on in America or, you know, thinking making it local or in Illinois or in Chicago. I just love the laziness. The laziness, the intellectual sophistry of the activist prognosticator. I'm not really an activist. I just handicap races and then I say this is what should happen and I bitch when it doesn't. The one thing I won't do is act in furtherance of what I would like to see happen. That's a bridge too far. You can shear off that bridge because I won't be crossing it. I'm just, you know, somebody in my own mind, I'm part of the punditocracy. It just happens to be in my living room rather than on a round table on one of the cable news channels. So you spare me, and I would encourage you to tell others, spare us the political prognostication as the means test for whether or not you can run for president or any other office and get right to the substance of the matter.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
It's freezing out, minus what? What are we at now? Minus 21. And you know where it's warm and sunny? In Nuevo Vallarta, Mexico. That's where we're heading with Apple Vacations, and you are invited to come along to the party. We're going to be there Saturday, April 6th through Saturday, April 13th, and we'll be staying at the beautiful, beautiful Miraval Residences Luxury Resort in Nuevo Vallarta, Mexico.
It's an all-inclusive resort just 10 minutes from the airport in Puerto Vallarta. Six gourmet restaurants, two bars, 24-hour room service, unlimited premium drinks, nine golf courses.
Ooh, you can play the Flamingo. That's a beautiful course.
Is it?
That's actually associated with the hotel, so.
All right. Julie,
you want to play with me this year?
No. I'll put it on the list. I'll play with other people then.
You can be in my foursome again.
You can play one round.
Oh, thanks, Dan.
And then get off the course with you. head to the spa, play tennis, snorkel.
Yes.
You can get more information, book your trip by visiting 560theanswer.com/passport. Every year, this trip gets better and better. We've got couples that return every single year to vacation. So join us this year. Visit 560theanswer.com/passport.
Don't miss out. We want to see you in April. 560theanswer.com/passport.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, make sure to cover your extremities and don't stay outside too long. And other anodyne advice from...
It takes your breath away. And if you have a heart condition, asthma, well, you got to be careful.
Yeah.
And now we have snow coming this afternoon, anywhere from 1 to 3 inches.
Thank you, Hill Street Blues. Hey, let's be careful out there.
Hey.
All right.
Great.
The good news is we're going to be in the black by the end of the day. We're going to be at 1 degree, and we're going up from there, so much so that by Sunday, I'll literally either be outside shooting or playing golf.
Yeah, you're going to have a tea time.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah.
And won't that be great? It'll be a 64-degree difference from what we're feeling right now.
So just, power through it.
We have one more day. I know, but just those feral cats. If anybody wants to donate one of those industrial-size heaters, maybe Charles Equipment, can help me out. We can plug into the garage to help the cats out for one last day of the sub-zero cold. Just
all
saying,
right.
Real quick, 312-642-5600. If you want to help.
No, it's great. Lakeview, you're on notice. All 200,000 feral cats in the city, as so estimated, will be in the alley behind Amy's house. If you want to see them, as soon as Charles Equipment delivers an industrial heater, for them.
Thank you.
All right. Turning to this case that's made national news and has got the political class involved now, the alleged attack on Tuesday morning of Empire actor Jussie Smollett. Bobby Rush, still a congressman from Chicago. He is calling for the FBI to conduct a hate crimes investigation into the attack.
Yeah, because civil rights violation, right? Because they were allegedly... saying homophobic slurs and also use the N-word.
And also wrapped something akin to a noose, some sort of rope around Jussie Smollett's neck. That's the accusation. Maxine Waters knows Jussie Smollett, and so she was even more strident. Okay. By the way, remember, a piece of this story is... Not reported in the first conversation Smollett had with police, but in a subsequent conversation was the two men that allegedly attacked him yelled, "This is MAGA country."
Okay, see right there, I know that this is all fake because this is not MAGA country. Don't everybody know that this is a Trump-free zone? We even took down his honorary street.
Well, that may not be the case to two of the individuals that Smollett that attacks Smollett, so he says. Maxine Waters.
Okay, I cannot wait to hear this.
No justice, no peace, Maxine.
She's been quiet lately, too. They've been keeping her in a corner.
quiet no more and her usual thoughtful, even-handed response.
I know Jesse. I love him. He's a family is a friend of mine. I know his sisters. I met his mom. And I called already to Jazz, one of the sisters, to talk to her about what's happening, what's going on. So she said he's okay. He's out of the hospital. And, you know, we didn't talk about it much more than that. But I was on my way to Chicago to see about him. You know what I'm saying? I love him. He's a fantastic human being. He's so giving. He shows up at all the community events. You know, he does a lot working with the community. But he comes from that kind of family. And so I'm pleased that he's doing okay. But we have to understand this is happening for a reason. Why all of a sudden do we have people unable to study while black, unable to mow a lawn while black, unable to have a picnic while black, and being attacked? It's coming from the President of the United States. He's dog whistling every day. He's separating and dividing. And he is basically emboldening those folks who feel this way, maybe never said it, never talked about it, never could act it out, but now they're on it. And when I heard about what had happened to Jesse, and I heard they put a rope around him and they poured bleach on him and stuff, I was absolutely very upset. So I'm feeling better that he's okay, and I'm looking forward to seeing him.
Well, I mean, in terms of not being able to mow your lawn while black, you can't mow your lawn while being libertarian either, because the left, just ask Rand Paul. Huh? No justice, no peace, Maxine?
That's right.
How about that? So that's the contention from Maxine Waters, well-respected.
Andrew Holmes.
Well-respected member of Congress in leftist circles. She is saying that Trump has unleashed racist, barbarian hordes to attack black people and obviously by extension other minorities. And so this Jussie Smollett alleged attack really needs to be placed at the doorstep of President Trump.
Yeah, they're blaming him. But here's the thing. So Jussie told police that he was on the phone with his manager slash agent when they were shouting racial slurs at him when they said, this is MAGA country. But he would not hand police over his cell phone to verify that. So that's a little sticky wicket here. I mean, if I was attacked and people were yelling things at me and throwing bleach on me and putting a noose around my neck, I would sure as heck give police my cell phone.
You got a dozen Chicago police detectives on the case.
That makes me mad too.
they've got the alleged phone conversation with the manager. The manager said he heard the racial slur because this attack reportedly occurred while he was on the phone with his manager. Then he went to his manager's apartment, passed the doorman up to his manager's apartment, and that's when they called police and police responded.
It was 45 minutes later after the attack. When police responded, one of my sources said he had a salt stain on his sweater, not on the coat. But when the subway video of him in the subway, he had a coat on.
The subway restaurant.
The subway restaurant. Yeah. So they released this surveillance.
He also, when the police got there, he also had reportedly still had the makeshift noose around his neck 45 minutes later.
Which police said looked more like a tie rather than, I mean, it was a string. It wasn't it wasn't a thick rope with double knots. It was just.
That's a bit curious.
Clothesline. Well, so here's the thing. So this surveillance video, which police said these are possible people of interest, people that they want to talk to, they look to me, I mean, it's a grainy photo, but they look African American to me.
Well,
if you zoom in on, well, because it reports where they were white, but they had masks on. These guys, one has a hood up. The other one, you could see part of his face. I don't know if they're just walking home from work or if they had anything to do with this.
And just to repeat, Smollett never identified them as white, according to the police report, because they had these ski masks on and hats. That didn't stop the press corps from identifying them as white. But Smollett didn't, and it's not reflected in the police report. And so I don't know. And apparently neither did the police, and apparently neither did Jussie Smollett. Just right. A point of order, since this is, you know, now racially charged.
So they've gone through hundreds of hours of surveillance videos from the entire area, in front of the Sheridan parking garage to the subway. And they've tracked Smollett's movements that night. So they confirm video shows Smollett walking
across the street from the two possible persons of interest. Then police said the video, he walks out for a frame for about a minute, then reappears on camera wearing a rope-like necktie. So it was a minute that he's on camera, but see, but they're not releasing images of Jussie Smollett. And they're just releasing these two possible people of interest. So he walks away for 1 minute, guys, 60 seconds, then walks back in frame and has this necktie on.
And the other thing about this, and I don't know the answer, I don't know that it's been disclosed, whether, I mean, he initially refused medical treatment, then he went to the hospital himself. Is there any indication, as reported, from police or from medical personnel about any substance, the residue of any substance on him, like bleach or some other chemical on him?
The police are taking the rope as part of the investigation and his clothes, his sweatshirt, to see
so
if there's independently tested to see what exactly that was. But he does not have any bleach burns on his body, from what I was told. He has a few, he has one abrasion, one little cut on his face, and a few bruises. Mm-hmm. Mayor Emanuel chimed in.
Obviously, the alleged statement of what happened here is horrific, and there's no place for it here in the city of Chicago.
And why the
thank you, Mr. Yeah. Obvious. Appreciate
why the FBI
that.
Is involved is because on January 22nd, on the set of Empire, where their mail is sent, he received a threatening letter. It was cut out from a magazine saying "die, blank blank," and it looked like a children's cartoon drawing of a gun to his just a stick figure's head. So that's why FBI was involved.
So the Maxine Waters comment that this okay. is. This, if what is alleged happened, as Jussie Smollett suggests, that this is part of the culture that has been unleashed by the hateful Donald Trump. And do you have any questions about Smollett's story?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. I mean, I just can't see people doing this. It just, it does not make sense, especially if they're yelling, this is MAGA country. I mean, really? And then if you look at the footage, he walks out for just 1 minute and then walks back in and he's standing up and he's fine. He has this tie around his neck and he's with his manager, which is, you know, and then he goes to his manager's apartment. I don't know. Won't hand his cell phone over to police.
Paul in Lake Forest, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning. Good show, guys.
Thanks.
A little side note, I'm in the MMJ space, medicinal marijuana space in California now for almost 4.5 years, and Willie Brown has been our point man out there. I'm embarrassed to admit that.
Oh, all right. Give him our regards.
He calls Kamala Harris Kamala Hairless, so I haven't heard that nickname for her yet.
Okay.
My friend's in the police department, and also they film Empire at my buddy's house up in Barrington. This guy, they're talking about, total drama queen, always making always having problems. And the story that we've heard is that he was spurned by a gay lover. The guy threw him out. And now the guy's throwing a temper tantrum and looking for attention. That's what we've heard.
Okay.
I urge everybody to listen at 8:38 this morning. We have a former Chicago police officer, sergeant, and a current private investigator, Paul Hubel, will be on to tell us what he knows about this. And in L.A. right now, actors and actresses are falling all over themselves to get out statements of support. There's reports of a march for him in LA on Saturday to an LGBTQ, XYZTT. They're going to be marching because they're very upset about all this, saying that they're still under attack. He's under attack as a black man. He's under attack as a gay man.
I don't know what the truth is, so I'm just asking questions and just, you know, we're just reporting what we know from police and from medical personnel and other mm-hmm. credible sources. But it's a bit remarkable to me that in the aftermath of what happened at the Lincoln Memorial between the Covington kids and that Native American agitator, Nathan Phillips, that everybody is just still just going to rush headlong into a narrative they hope is true and exercise no restraint, ask no questions, offer no healthy skepticism, wait not wait for the picture to be filled in a bit before they're organizing marches and making mea culpas to Jussie Smollett about what happened. It just shows you, like, if you thought most people who have an agenda to advance were going to be chastened at all by what happened with the Covington kids, you're wrong.
And real quick, for me, this reminds me of Christine Blasey Ford. I believe something happened to her, but Brett Kavanaugh had nothing to do with it. And I believe that something happened to this actor, clearly, because he does have some abrasions and some bruises, but it's not what he's saying to police. That's how I feel.
Tom in Lake Villa.
Hey, Dan. I know that this is a hoax because there's no Subway sandwich restaurant open past 9 o'clock.
No, that's not true.
That's not true. Not down there.
In Streeterville, because I know because I've gone to it. Yeah. I'm not far from there. It's open late. Yeah, thanks for the call, Tom. I think it's actually open 24 hours.
It's a 24-hour Subway.
Yeah. So, you know,
you can get breakfast there too, Dan.
He's not the only one that was looking for a foot long in the early morning hours.
Oh, my gosh.
What?
Wildly inappropriate. And childish.
That's what they have. They have 12-inch sandwiches
it's
and 6 inches.
$5 foot long, right? Yeah.
I like the Italian.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, anyway.
David and McCook.
Hey, good morning, guys. I like that 12-inch thing.
Look back here.
I'm getting sick of Maxine Waters, Kamala the Ugandan Giant Harris, and Al Sharpton. All have something to say the minute there's a hint of a white guy on a black crime. But what about the 1,000 black-on-black crimes every day, little kids getting shot in drive-bys? You don't hear a peep out of anybody when that happens.
Yeah, thanks for the call, David. Mike on the north side.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, here we go.
Mike.
Hi, good morning.
Good.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Oh, man, it was cold out there yesterday. It was so cold. I saw Mike Madigan and his hands in his own pockets.
Hi-yo!
It was so cold, the Chicago aldermen were asking for the electric chair.
Hi-yo!
It was so cold. I saw Bruce Rauner cuddling with J.B. Pritzker just to stay warm.
It was so cold,
the neighborhood flasher wouldn't open up his coat. He just described himself to the old ladies.
Okay, now you're stealing from Carson.
Cold. Okay, it was so cold, the Picasso froze off her hoo-hot. It was so cold, my neighbor had to pry his dog off a hydrant. And it was so cold, when I told the woman from Allstate when I wanted a place in her hands, she canceled my policy.
Thank you so much.
Well, what about
Mike
Smollett? By the way, he did speak with CNN's Don Lemon over the phone and said that the attack did take place. He wouldn't go on the air with him, but they had a conversation.
Is Don Lemon still in the place he was New Year's Day a couple of years ago where he was open to a relationship?
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So we've talked to our next guest before when he was being challenged to be on the ballot, a petition challenge that was filed by Marty Quinn. He's the Madigan mini-me, who's the 13th Ward Alderman. David Krupa is a DePaul undergrad who's running for alderman in the 13th Ward. And if you recall in that case,
That's right. Signatures.
Yeah, the Madigan goon squad went out and got more affidavits suggesting that people hadn't signed David Krupa's petitions than there were actually petitions that signature petitions that David Krupa filed. And also the intersection between the affidavit saying I didn't sign David Krupa's petitions and the actual names of people on David Krupa's petitions, the match. The Venn diagram was a sliver of the signatories. So the bottom line is it was four figures of fraud. Every fraudulent affidavit is a felonious act. What's to be done about it? There was some initial reporting that there was going to be a local investigation. Maybe even the FBI was looking at that. I don't know where that stands. But David Krupa and his team aren't waiting for law enforcement to act. This week, he filed a civil suit against Mike Madigan and Marty Quinn. Oh. So it's nice to see Mike Madigan getting it from a couple of different angles this week. For more on this story and David Krupa's candidacy, we're pleased to be joined by David Krupa, 13th Ward Aldermanic candidate. David, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Well, it's great talking to you guys again. I appreciate it as well.
So before we get to your lawsuit, do you have any idea if and where law enforcement investigations, whether locally or federally, stand with respect to what happened?
Well, it's FBI protocol that they don't tell you whether or not they're investigating,
right.
But they do say that they're looking into it, as in my case. They take every complaint very seriously, and the fact that they called me and asked me a couple of questions means that there very well might be an investigation, and it's certainly something for Madigan to be scared about. As for local investigators, like the Inspector General or the State's Attorney's Office, I believe they are also looking into it. I've gotten calls from people saying that Cook County sheriffs came to their door and asked them to verify their signature and showed them these revocations. Of course, these people aren't getting in trouble, but they're just investigating to see, you know, how many were actually invalid.
Now, have you been invited by Danny Solis to an Asian massage parlor to try and settle this matter out of court?
No, I haven't. Haven't talked to Danny Solis.
All right, just curious.
David, are you at liberty to tell us what the FBI asked you?
What
kind of questions?
It was basically just all the nuances of what had happened. It's all information. Everything that I know that I told him, I've told a media outlet at one point or another. So he just wanted me to catch him up to speed.
Now tell us about the civil suit that you filed against Madigan and Madigan Mini-Me, Marty Quinn, this week.
Well, in the civil lawsuit, the federal lawsuit, we alleged that there was civil rights violations, you know, violations of my constitutional rights, fraud and conspiracy on the parts of Marty Quinn, Michael Madigan, 13th Ward Democratic Organization, Citizens for Marty Quinn, and possibly friends of Michael J. Madigan, who financed the entire organization. And these are the defendants in the federal lawsuit, and we can also add more as we go along.
And so, give us the basis for this, or maybe just take a step back. Were the federal authorities aware you were going to file this civil suit? Because sometimes, you know, they don't want things to run concurrently. So I just wonder if they were aware that you were moving civilly against Madigan and Marty Quinn as well.
I did not speak to them about, you know, whether or not I was going to file this federal lawsuit. I mean, it was something that I was talking about in the media. Mm-hmm. They never told me not to do it. And I wanted jump on it quick because it takes probably many years, like 2 or 3 years to finish one of these things. So,
and what is it that you're hoping to gain from the suit?
Well, there's a couple of things. You know, one, my lawyer and I want to set a precedent. So if anyone has, if anybody abuses the objection process in the future or abuses the revocation process, you know, and we win this federal lawsuit, hopefully future candidates can cite this and say, well, you can't do that because Krupa versus Madigan, you know, and I think that's one of the things that we're trying to do legally. The other things that I'm trying to do are go after Mike Madigan and my alderman, Marty Quinn, and try and secure justice for not just myself, and really not just the people who have been taken off the ballot for the past 27 years, but the people of the ward, the voters of the ward who were forced and strong-armed to perjure themselves. And, you know, this whole revocation process has been such a headache to many people. They're now referring to themselves as victims. And when there's victims, you need justice. And this is a great way to bring them to justice. Anything that we find here in this federal lawsuit will be immediately turned over to the FBI. And hopefully they can use it towards any investigation that they're doing. And, of course, I want to get these guys on the record for what happened.
Okay.
Those are the biggest things.
So what have you learned from this whole process? I mean, you're young. How old are you?
19.
Okay, you're not even old enough to drink yet. So that's all right. You can't hang out with Dan yet.
He's barely old enough to be your son. I mean, it might be more like a grandson.
But what have you learned from all of this? I mean, this is just eye-opening, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this was a great learning experience. You know, you hear stories about Chicago politics, but it's certainly interesting to live it and to be at the end of the barrel when these guys are doing all this stuff. But we've managed to survive through it all, you know, keep ourselves on the ballot. And I think it's somewhat impressive for a newcomer like myself to come in and totally embarrass this political machine, because realistically, that's what's happened. I mean, every time we do something that exposes them, we add insult to injury. And I know that Madigan can't stand it. I mean, we got him to issue a statement publicly.
Yeah, that suggests that they're capable of being embarrassed, which I'm not so sure, but I take your point. So where does the campaign stand? I mean, you do have this race that well, could be adjudicated on February 26th if Marty Quinn gets 50% plus one of the vote, or if you do, probably less likely. Where does that race stand? How's the campaign going? Do you get the sense that ward residents are aware of this imbroglio that you've started?
Well, I think the campaign is actually going a lot better than people give us credit for. You know, if everybody comes out to vote, you know, if people don't stay home because they think, oh, well, you know, my vote isn't going to make a difference. No, your vote will probably make the difference. It's going to be a competitive race, but I think we're going to come out on top. I think we've been the favorite to win since just before the holidays. And I think that we can really make history here. We can be the change that we want to see in the world, and we can start by changing the corrupt Chicago politics and voting out some of the corrupt officials like Mike Madigan and Marty Quinn.
Yeah, but give us a sense. Give us a sense of families in the ward.
What are you hearing?
Us a sense of what the 13th ward composition is and what people are saying to you about Madigan and Marty.
Okay, so the 13th ward composition is made up of roughly 66% Hispanic and most of the rest is white as of the last census. Most people don't like Madigan, obviously, and then a lot of people don't even like Marty Quinn, but he's the more appealing one. And what I found through the signature process was that there was a lot of people who wanted to support us that couldn't because they were city workers or didn't want to sign because their precinct captain would, you know, not give them any services or something like that. You know, people are scared, but I want them to know that come election day, the precinct captains and Mike Madigan are not going to know who you vote for in the polling booth. So you can say one thing now and put up their sign and vote a totally different way in the polling booth if you so choose.
Ooh, yeah, a little surreptitious play. I like that. All right, David Krupa, people want more information on your campaign. Where do they go? What's your website?
Well, we're about to totally revamp our website. It's davidkrupa.com. It's going to be turning from the blue color that it is now to another orange, and we're going to add a lot more text to it. We've also got quite a bit of information about the campaign on the GoFundMe as well, which is there's a link to that on the website, and our Facebook page, David Krupa for 13th Ward Alderman.
And you haven't been expelled from DePaul for daring to run against the Chicago Democrats, have you?
No, DePaul has not told me that they were going to expel me.
Okay, good. I just wanted to check
Stay
in.
Stay safe, you know. Watch your back.
Yeah, the tentacles where they reach.
Oh, and real quick, has anything else happened to you? Since, you know, like a slashed tire, is anything that we need to know?
No, but actually, you know, it's funny you said the slashed tires thing because a political advisor of mine actually got his tires slashed, and they know who he is. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was related, but I'm not going to make that insinuation.
Make sure they don't cut your brake line, okay?
Okay.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, that one.
Well, you're playing with the big boys now.
Okay, all right. Somebody's watched too many episodes of House of Cards, David. David Krupa, candidate for 13th Ward Alderman. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
And thank you very much for having me.
All right, good
luck. Take care, good luck.
Hey, join us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, and, you know, we're still in day two of the deep freeze. Actually, colder when we started the show today than it was yesterday.
Minus 21 right now.
We've had some interesting offerings over the last 2 days on the school closures.
Yeah.
Some talented superintendents and
some
principals.
Some not-so-talented principals.
Well, let's start with a talented one. This is.
Do you want to do the good one? I think we should do the best one last.
No, this is. We may not have. We may have run out of time.
Oh yeah, this is a
Swartz Creek, Michigan superintendent
Ben Mankia
to the tune of Hallelujah.
He's so good.
I heard about a winter storm. It's cold and dreary. Stay home, stay warm. It's cold and it's a snowy winter morning. It goes like this when the snow hits, the buses can't get out of it. It's cold and it's a snowy winter morning. It's a snow day, a winter cold day. Stay home and just play. It's a great family day.
All right, those guys are good. Those guys can sing. Those guys
Excuse
can sing.
Excuse my stomach, I'm hungry.
Well, those.
Somebody likes the music in here, not just me.
He's crying. Is that a dry eye in the house? All right, principal up in Huntley. Do we have the school on this guy?
We're going local. He's a superintendent in Huntley School District.
He's a superintendent or a principal? I think he's a principal. He's
Sorry. Yeah. Huntley Raiders. It's okay. You decide, though.
Huntley, principal, we'll get his name and details, offering a rap school closing song.
Look, my Raiders are tough. My staff is real. I lead this school on my hoverboard wheels. Today is cold. You might get chill. So stay inside. The temp is real. Cold as ice. Check the wind chill. Minus 50. It's the real deal. For two whole days, we cancel school. Today and tomorrow, you know that's cool. School was born to flex. Dancers went to state. Cheer is on its way. Just to get the mate. Huntley Raiders, you can't eliminate.
All right.
It's not bad.
Not bad.
But this one.
This is Principal Inger in Johnson County, Wisconsin.
Because the kids are going to play. The parents going to hate. Kids just going to take a day. High schoolers going to sleep. And the gamers going to game. It's just gonna take a day.
She makes me feel good about my voice. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, it's tough. The Taylor Swift. You know,
it's too high and pitchy.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Our friend Jeff Carter, who Points and Figures blog is his outlet. He's a venture capitalist, founded High Park Angels. Wrote a great piece at the end of last year. We talked about Chicago's closed network, explaining how Chicago lost HQ2 and is losing so much else in terms of entrepreneurial capacity and raw population. His most recent piece, Shiberia, Carter concludes with this statement. When I talk to Chicago transplants, they miss it. Chicago is home, but they aren't going back. In an age where workers are mobile and have choice, cities cannot afford to be cesspools of corruption. Their networks have to be open. And, of course, this follows on his previous piece about the closed network that is Chicago. It is a cesspool of corruption, and that's why people are leaving. And what's the response from the political class? The same response as you get from socialists at the national level. Soak the rich, right? The rich are bad.
Yeah, but they've always vilified the rich. If you're successful, if you've done well for yourself, you're a bad person. And that's such a wrong message
Unless you're funding their outfits and operations. And so, you know, you're, oh, somebody's a silver spoon guy in Republican circles, but it's okay, you know, Spalding, the silver spoon guy in our circle, is fine. Billionaire Howard Schultz is problematic because he could help Trump if he ran as an independent candidate for president. Billionaire Tom Steyer, billionaire George Soros, not problematic because they're doing our bidding and funding our leftist agitprop, right?
Right. Only, yeah, if you're rich and you're a Republican, you're bad. That's what I've learned over the years.
Yeah, well, that's right. And so people get the message. Krista McQuarrie's piece this week is interesting. Why the Illinois exit, the rich exodus, the rich get bashed and off they go. A recent anecdote she shares, 25-year-old, a 25-year, excuse me, Chicagoan, sold his two-bedroom, two-and-a-half-bath Lincoln Park townhome in early January at a $30,000 loss. He's moving to Indiana. Like thousands of others, I tired of the one-party system, rising pension debt, no change to the current pension system, increasing property taxes, mine doubled, increasing crime and soft approach to criminals. That's what this gentleman wrote to McQuarrie. It's fine to accept, spend, and frolic in Democrat largesse without guilt, writes McQuarrie. Money is not repugnant if it's attached to Democrats whose government connections or family hierarchy made them millionaires. Pritzker's an obvious one, but the entire Chicago Democrat power structure and all the longtime crime families, including another scion of one that's certainly in the running to be the next mayor, Bill Daley. And Madigan and Cullerton and so many more. The number of residents fleeing Illinois for other states jumped to 93,000 in 2014 from 68 the previous year, increased in 2015 to 106,000, in 2016 went to 109,000, in 2017, 114,000, and last year, another 114,000. She writes, so who do you think is leaving Illinois? Of course, the people with the means to do so, even at a loss, short-term loss, better than a long-term hammering. But she also flips the script on the rich guy narrative that the left wants to tell. How do we get to a place where wealth, success, and entrepreneurship are shameworthy and where giving back by these same individuals is largely ignored? You know, Tony Preckwinkle, also right there in the running to be the next mayor of Chicago, doesn't believe in self-employment. Remember we played that clip recounting of a young lawyer talking to Tony Preckwinkle about entrepreneurship in the black community. That's false hope you're giving people. I don't believe in self-employment. I believe in what she's effectively saying. I believe in government jobs and we'll move you along at the pace of the central planners. I believe in me telling you what you can want, not you pursuing what you want in an unbounded way. You're bounded by the political ruling class. I don't believe in self-employment, Tony Preckwinkle. That's as crazy as anything that's come out of Ocasio-Cortez or Elizabeth Warren or Kamala Harris. But McQuarrie tells the story of Tom Ricketts and Ninth Ward Alderman Tony Beal. Tony Beal spent the last decade trying to get together private financing to put together a sports center in Pullman. And Tom Ricketts, the Cubs chairman, was persuaded by Beal to through Cubs Charities, to donate $500,000 to the Pullman Community Center, which is a state-of-the-art indoor recreational complex that opened this past November in Beal's ward after a decade of trying to put it together.
That's great.
She writes, does McQuarrie, left-leaning politicians bash people like Ricketts and want to tax them more to solve budget problems. But remember, Ricketts didn't vote for those unbalanced budgets year after year. He didn't accumulate mountains of debt. He didn't vote to underfund worker pensions. He didn't vote to borrow more money instead of cutting spending. The Democrats in Chicago and Springfield did that. So when you hear the wealth bashing, make no mistake who's really responsible for the budget mess we're in. It isn't the Ricketts family. Hmm. What about that? And what about those who are productive and philanthropic who don't get it either? They're so cowardly that they're pressured into supporting the same status quo. Now, there's the rent seekers who make money by being part of the closed network. But I'm talking about even successful people outside of the network that support the closed network anyway, to their detriment, as well as the detriment of the entire city, region, state. It's remarkable, isn't it? I mean, here's what's happening, just so you know, okay? When you're thinking about your home, I go back again. Property taxes. You think there's a way out. You think you're insulated. You're not thinking properly. How about the fugitive home that was on the market for 7 years? 336 West Wisconsin. It was sold December 13th at a $1.6 million real loss. From the asking price back in 2011 to what it sold for, $1.6 million. Corey Crawford, you know, he's the Blackhawks goalie.
Oh, yeah.
Bought a townhome in River North. Sold it to his parents in 2016. They just sold it November 3rd of last year. Lost $190,000 in 2 years. River North. Owners of golf pioneer Charles Blair McDonald, Chicago Golf Club. 2-acre estate that sits next to Chicago Golf Club in Wheaton. The owners who bought it in July of 2007 sold it in, listed it in May, and took a $670,000 loss on the sale. Real dollars, adjusted for inflation, while paying $355,000 in property taxes. Oof. 27% of the sale price.
Ouch.
For the little over a decade they owned it. I mean, spin the wheel and pick a community. Former Morningstar exec loses $760,000 on Gold Coast duplex. Imprisoned real estate lawyer loses $310,000 on Oakbrook home. Former Starwood retail CEO loses $500,000 on Gold Coast home. Just regular people. Daniel and Jeannie Fry lose $160,000 on Glenview home. Michael Connolly loses $351,000 on Lamont home. A couple in Crystal Lake, $114,000 loss. Dave and Jana Heckel in Gilbert's, $180,000 loss. Hadresh and Nilesh Patel lose $18,000 in Urbana, sell their home. Gregory and Diana Schuster lose $165,000 on their Naperville home. Elizabeth Hayano and Peter Jensen lose $161,000 in River Forest. Lawrence and Karen King lose $451,000 in Long Grove. Donna Keene and Raymond Keene lose $144,000 in Orland Park. Adele and Linda Zeiden lose over $140,000 in Woodridge. I mean, I have 100 stories. These are all sales in the last quarter. And they're all hammerings. And the losses that, in terms of the numbers, I'm talking about real dollars paid versus sold. I'm not even factoring in the property taxes that were paid during the time period where the sellers own the home.
And then you have information about that home that I drive by every day that I watch being constructed, where it sold for $5 million back in 2013. And it just sold for what, $1.85 million?
Yeah.
This, I mean, that they
mansion
took
in Lakeview.
Bath. It's everyone. It's on Addison and near Lincoln there. Oh, my God. I mean, they took a huge – that's millions of dollars.
So these are the people that unfortunately, I mean, I don't know. We haven't looked up their cross-checked their voting records. Probably a lot of them vote Democrat. Okay. I mean, you hate your home. You hate your money. You love being fleeced. When somebody says, "I'm running a Ponzi scheme and I'm going to extract more from you for it," you say, "Thank you. Please do so." You're the majority percentage of this state says, after Bernie Madoff is exposed as having run a Ponzi scheme, I would like to invest.
Well, it's so weird because people, they're not so upset about their property taxes, but when the soda tax came up, that's when I heard finally people squawking. And people are squawking, too, about this entertainment tax, amusement tax, on our kids' PlayStation. What's next? Is the government going to come in and say, oh, you're playing ping pong, I need 9% of the cost of your ping pong table? I mean, for you to they're not waking up about the property taxes.
Yeah, it's idiosyncratic. It's like, oh, I'm getting taxed
over
everywhere.
Their mortgage, so they don't, you know, their property taxes is escrowed, so they don't see the real. They're not feeling the pinch yet. But then when they go to sell their home, then they're feeling it.
Mm-hmm. No, I get it.
Waking up to what we've been saying for 8 years.
I get they're not paying attention, and they don't want to pay attention, and they're, you know, sentimental barbarians who lead with their empty-handed emotions. I get it. Just okay. Just know for you who are not, who do not fit that description, they are going to take you down with them. So when I say revolt or bolt, it's not just about informing the ignorant or the craven, the rent seekers inside the closed network who don't care because they benefit from the status quo. The great line from the series boss, Kelsey Grammer, plays the mayor of Chicago. That's what this mayoral election is. Continuity or a change on the outside to protect continuity on the inside. The appearance of change. So you get from the mealy-mouthed Bill Daley, system change, or structural change. The projection of change to the outside to protect continuity on the inside. That's the racket. But they will take you down with them. So as long as you're here, as long as I'm here, you might as well fight, right, to try and minimize the damage that will be inflicted. Preventing it is gone. Now you're in the minimization business because none of us are going to live long enough based on the trajectory of this city and state and the mentality of the majority of it to do a full reversal. But it would be nice to minimize it, wouldn't it? Maybe you have higher, better uses of your money than to feeding the closed network. Maybe your kids' college education or what you leave them when you pass from this mortal coil is something that's important to you as compared to just allowing yourself to be fleeced by the purveyors of the Ponzi schemes. I don't know. Just saying. But at least you understand the argument being made and the data, the reality on the ground. Spin the wheel, pick a community, pick a block, and I'll tell you. And it's all there at your fingertips. No more I didn't know excuses. Because, yes, unfortunately, it's just a small fraction of the metropolitan area or the state that listens to this show that's interested. But that small fraction has a enormous responsibility. The people that know have an enormous responsibilities. Enormous responsibility to confer knowledge, to take up the case, to make the arguments. I'm sorry it's not equally distributed, but we don't believe in equal distribution in some central planned sense. We believe in seizing opportunities, and that's what you should do with information that is readily available. See how many scales you can remove from how many eyes. Ed in Oak Brook, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Pressing discussion you're having, but it's reality, and I realize that, and I've known it for years. But you wait until this tax season, I'm talking about income tax season, and when people realize they can't even use their tax as a deduction. Last year was kind of a funny year because a lot of people prepaid, but this year here it's going to be super reality, and you know what? You're going to see people jumping out of windows because it's just going to be very painful, and I don't know what they can do about it, but I know I'm stuck. I got grandkids and all that good stuff. So, and I see it every day, and I want to get out of here every day. I mean, I got a house waiting for me in Vegas, but I just can't get out there because I'm stuck here. So, anyway, have a nice day, I guess.
All right, thanks for the call, Ed. Well, spread the word while you're here until you can make it out to Vegas. Spread the word beyond our show.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
All right, I wanted to play.
Things are frozen around here, you know. Pipes, mics.
wanted to play the parody song from a little while back from Tim O'Donnell, listener of the show. Came in studio, you recall, to Billy Joel's Moving Out. See if this hits you.
Mike Manapkin runs the Democratic House floor for 30 plus years running. He's promising this and he's stealing that. Where can you get that kind of money? He's using your house like his own piggy bank. You ought to know by now. You can pay off your house here in Illinois, but you can never keep up with the taxes. Oh, how it's always been the plan to have a taxpayer pay no doubt. Not a matter of if anymore, but when you're moving out.
Maybe lyrically. Maybe lyrically we can penetrate the consciousness of the public if we can't do it with data.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity, this afternoon at 2, right before Joe Walsh at 5 on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So earlier in the week, CNN sponsored a little campaign rally for Kamala Harris. I thought that was nice of them.
Well, it was so important to them that they actually had a countdown clock on 24 hours prior to it for the Kamala Harris town hall in Iowa. I mean, really, they promoted the heck out of this thing.
And
like second coming.
And Willie Brown's ex fielded questions on a number of topics, including guns. And here's what you can expect to hear from most of the Democrat socialist candidates for president over the next 18 months.
We have witnessed a case where a seated member of Congress, acting in her official capacity as a member of the United States Congress, was shot and permanently injured. Her name is Gabby Giffords. The people who work with her every day, who know her, you know, we have colleagues, we know them, we know their children, we break bread, we share holiday moments with them. The people who knew her didn't act. She was acting in her official capacity, not on vacation somewhere. You would think even out of self-interest they would have acted. They failed to act. 20 six- and seven-year-old babies were massacred in Connecticut. They failed to act. Here's what I think. I think that somebody should have required, and this is going to sound very harsh, I think somebody should have required all those members of Congress to go in a room, in a locked room, no press, no one, nobody else, and look at the autopsy photographs of those babies. And then you vote your conscience. This has become a political issue.
Oh, now it's a political issue. Yeah, okay. All right, how about that? If you look at autopsy photos of gun violence victims, then you'll naturally draw the conclusion that law-abiding gun owners should have their rights restricted or torn asunder altogether. Okay, that's the sentimental barbarism of the left. And there's new data that perhaps provides more insight into where improvements can actually be made to reduce the incidence of gun violence. And for more on that, we're pleased to be joined by Robert Verbruggen, who is the Deputy Managing Editor at National Review, nationalreview.com. Robert, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So if you would have been forced under the direction of Kamala Harris, President Kamala Harris, to view the autopsy photos of the kids that were massacred at Newtown, would you support an assault weapon ban?
I would not. No, I mean, this is something that I've actually been writing about for a long time. Gun violence, both in terms of gun rights and also trying to figure out ways to actually reduce gun violence, and really an assault weapon ban is not the answer to that. Just so few of the gun violence episodes that we have in this country are committed with assault weapons. That's really just not where the problem is at all.
And
you wrote a great article, too, about where criminals get their guns. And it was fascinating, I thought, because a lot of them obviously don't purchase these weapons legally.
Right, that's right. There's a new survey out by the Department of Justice. It was conducted back in 2016, but just released a couple weeks ago. And they did similar surveys back in the 90s that released very similar results. And basically, first of all, about half of them are just getting their guns through flagrantly illegal sources. They're getting them on the underground market. They're getting them through theft. And a lot of the other ones are getting them through their social networks, family and friends. And these are certainly, you know, they're private transactions that you could say, you know, we should require background checks on them. But if somebody's, you know, a gang member and they're getting guns through their family and friends, these are not folks who are going to conduct background checks. And meanwhile, only about 10% of them are buying them at retail stores where the background checks are already being conducted, which makes sense. And among those retail purchases, only about 1% of them are through gun shows, which is another big focus of the gun control bait, closing this gun show loophole, which is only a source of less than 1% of the guns. So, I mean, the survey really, to me, makes it very clear that it's difficult to solve this problem just by passing laws saying that people need to pass background checks or trying to ban specific types of guns. What you really need to do is focus on this underground market and see what we can do to crack up that underground market through law enforcement.
And so calls as were offered by Kamala Harris the other night, universal background check. This is a catchphrase of the left. Close the gun show loophole you just mentioned. That's another one. Assault weapon ban. Translate what they're saying or what direction they really want to head when they're offering these sort of aphorisms that you've been hearing from them for the last several decades.
Well, I mean, I often say when I'm talking to my more conservative friends that I'm a little bit of a squish on the background check issue in particular, because it's possible that if you did require background checks, it would make it harder to put guns on the underground market to begin with. Not everything they're saying is completely crazy, but they're, to me, first of all, in the near term, they're focused on the wrong thing. They're focused on what we really need to do is start breaking up these underground markets. We need to have vigorous law enforcement targeted at the individuals who are actually creating problems with guns, which is a very, very small percentage of the people who own guns in this country. And then I think the end game for a lot of people on the left is, you know, of course, much more severe measures, things like gun bans. And some of them are becoming a lot more open about that now, I think, because you have this sort of resistance movement on the left where they're not afraid to you know, say what they really think instead of trying to, you know, disguise it to appear moderate.
Well, and you have, I mean, just in terms of the reaction in the wake of school shootings and other mass shootings, you have the story out this week, Baltimore police in schools not allowed to carry guns. So, do you think these debates about armed security hardening targets like schools after Parkland in particular is a productive one? And how are we to receive reactions in urban centers like Baltimore, which has even a higher per capita murder rate than Chicago, when they want to disarm the police, much less just the law-abiding civilian?
Well, I mean, I think that disarming the police is crazy. I mean, these are people who are trained to respond to these types of incidents. They're people who are trained with firearms quite extensively. I mean, that's just crazy. To me, it makes sense to defer, you know, especially when it comes to armed security guards and even armed teachers, to defer to the local area. I mean, I personally would be fine with armed teachers as long as they're provided the training that they need to be able to do that. And I think that would provide a deterrent against mass shooters. But I mean, you know, if you're in an urban area and the political winds really blowing the other direction and everybody really hates guns and they don't want their teachers armed, you know, I think that's a matter of local control that they need to be allowed to make that decision. But I think it's productive to have a discussion about that and whether it can be helpful to have more armed people in schools, including police officers, security guards, and other staff who've been trained properly.
Yeah, and speaking of schools, I mean, when you look at the Parkland shooter, the reason why he passed his background check is because the school had a system in place where if you committed a crime, they didn't put it on your record, which seems crazy.
Well, so they didn't enlist police.
They didn't enlist police, yeah, right. They just didn't report it to police, and they just kept it in their own school records. So do you think there should ever be a time when school, they should be able to call, if you want to purchase a weapon, they should be able to call your high school or your school counselor, your principal, and say, does he have any, you know, infractions on his record?
Well, one really interesting idea that that I support, and one of my colleagues, David French, has written about quite a bit. It's called the red flag law.
Yeah.
And what this would be is if you have a family member, or if you're, you know, a school principal or a teacher, and you have a student who is having some, you know, serious difficulties, you can petition to a court and have a hearing and provide the evidence that they shouldn't be allowed to have a gun. And then that would at least temporarily restrict their ability to acquire a gun.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing would help, I think. But in the Parkland case, it was just, I mean, it isn't even a matter of nobody flagged him to the police. It was a matter of the police didn't bother to give the kid the record that he deserved, which would have stopped him from having a gun under the current system.
Right.
I mean, he brought a backpack full of bullets to school, and the police were not informed.
Yeah, but there were also 45 police visits to his house. So it's system failure across the board. But just on the red flag law, though, isn't it important to distinguish some of the different proposals? Because I've read what David French, your colleague, has written about it. And he makes this distinction that a hearing so that the party who's being targeted has a chance to respond in court as well, because some of the red flag proposals are unilateral. Like you can say, I got a problem with this family member or I got a problem with this student, and you can have a hearing with that person being targeted in absentia. So it's one sided.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something that David's written about and something that I agree with. This is a constitutional right that we're talking about. There needs to be due process. We need to have a hearing where the person is present to defend themselves, and we need to, you know, give both sides room to make their case. That's absolutely crucial, and I think it's true that a lot of people on the left are not so sensitive to that concern.
I wanted to get your reaction to the FBI report that was released the other day about the Las Vegas massacre and the conclusion they drew, which is, we don't know why he did it. We'll never know what his real motive was. And just whether or not that conclusion speaks to a discussion that needs to be had about humility. In other words, we don't know why somebody did that horrible thing, committed that atrocity, but we know how to stop it. You know, which is what the politicians are saying. So the law enforcement is saying we don't know why he did it. Politicians say we got this one. We know how to prevent another Las Vegas from happening. Isn't there a disconnect there?
Yeah, the distinction I would draw is between something like Las Vegas and then the vast majority of gun violence on the other hand. Something like Las Vegas was a one-time event that was completely, even among mass shootings, which are very rare, that was just an outlier.
Mm-hmm.
It was something that, and it's chilling that we have no idea why this man would do such a thing. But if you look at some of the other research on just sort of run-of-the-mill gun violence, it's not so mysterious. It's, you know, we have good information, especially in some of these urban police departments that collect good data on arrests. We know who the people are who are involved in shootings. We can predict who's going to be shot. We can look at social networks and say that these social networks are involved in a very disproportionate amount of street crime and gun violence, and we can target those social networks. So to me, maybe we should be less focused on these rare occurrences like mass shootings and more focused on, you know, the vast bulk of the gun violence that we actually have good data on how to prevent.
That's a good point. Robert Verbruggen, he's the deputy managing editor of National Review. His latest piece is on that new report he was discussing as to where criminals get their guns. Robert, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, this is the best thing you're going to hear and you should go see online all week, maybe all year. Gary Woodland, PGA Tour player, and a young golfer named Amy. This is before the Phoenix Open, which starts today.
Isn't it the Waste Management Phoenix Open?
That is the Waste Management Phoenix Open.
My whole family's going to that thing. And I'm stuck here.
Amy was brought onto the course. Amy is a girl with special needs. She's brought onto the course.
She's Down syndrome, right?
Drive, sand shot, and putt.
That's him.
That's him. Yeah. What's he doing?
How are you? Are you Amy?
Yes.
Give me a hug. I'm Gary. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you
too. I hear you're a good golfer.
Yes.
You are? You want to come with the home with us?
Yes.
Come on. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Matt. What's your name?
Amy.
This is John.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. I hear you're a heck of a player.
Yes.
Awesome.
You want to hit a shot?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
All right, let's do it.
Oh! Yeah!
She's got a great swing.
She
actually.
Better than yours. We got yours. Your clubs
right
yes,
here. Exactly.
Big focus, all right?
And she looks better in the skirt.
I know, about that?
They there love me. The fans clapping for her.
Nice to meet you. Let's do it.
Yeah.
You need a tee?
All right.
See the flag right in the middle?
Yeah.
You got this, kiddo.
Yeah, I got this. Right.
Nice.
So she just sliced, or not sliced, she didn't slice, she drilled a drive.
Oh, yeah, and she's with Special Olympics from Arizona, so they picked her out. And
like, then she kept saying, she's walking up to the sand for her to hit, she said, I can do this, I can do this, knocks it out of the sand onto the green, and then cold-blooded. I mean, Phoenix Open, the crowd's there, all the pros, drains the 12-foot putt.
It's like you can't make this stuff up. It was beautiful.
I tweeted out. You got to check it out. Gary Woodland and Amy.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and again, Bill Daly featured interview over the weekend with Mike Flannery on Fox Chicago. Tackle a range of topics, including how Bill Daly is a reformer. He's a change agent. He's a structural change guy.
You can't, nor I or anyone else, make somebody honest. But you can change a system that has existed for almost 100 years that maybe leads the climate. We should have term limits. We should have no outside income. We should have the aldermen not mini mayors of their wards. We should make them more like legislators.
Don't you need the aldermen, though, to agree to take their own power away?
Yeah, he'll work on it. For more on the mayor's race, where it stands now with... just 4 weeks to go before the primary election, where the top two finishers will then run off against one another to the first Tuesday in April. We're pleased to be joined by our friend John Cass, Chicago Tribune columnist extraordinaire. John, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, everyone.
Morning. So the Burke Four, as they're being called by the other candidates, Preckwinkle, Daly, Chico, and Mendoza. Do you see those as the source of the top two finishers come February 26th, or are there opportunities for other candidates to make the runoff?
I think there are always opportunities when you have people clotted together like that. There's so many clotted together that no one's breaking really free of this thing. But if the four of them maintain the kind of media love they're getting, where they're allowed to call themselves change agents without much challenge, I think there are enough stupid people in the town to elect them.
Who is
one of them?
Yeah, who has impressed you so far, if any of the candidates of the 14?
I'm going always with the people that were in the race before Rahm Emanuel dropped out. Those are the people that I thought... they thought were the serious people in the race. They're the ones who understood Chicago was in deep, deep, as Rauner used to say, doo-doo or yogurt. And I just think that they're the ones who are worthy of consideration. The ones that came in after Preckwinkle, Daly, Mendoza, and Chico, they're just status quo opportunists. They're part of the system that has, you guys talk about every morning.
So do you think it's
basically...
Do you think it's fair to call those four candidates then the Burke Four, or is there any candidate in the race that's not part of the sort of the Burke Madigan power system?
I think that given that this is Chicago, that anyone who's been involved in public life had to come up. But I think you see, like, Lori Lightfoot and Paul Vallis, they're more like technocrats than players. Chico and Mendoza, for God's sake, Mendoza, I just heard you yesterday She's now talking about inflicting pain and torturing people, inflicting pain as they die, right?
Yeah. Well, she's all about capital punishment. I mean,
Jesus. Hang 'em high, Susanna. Yeah, no question.
It was a little shocking. But what about the surgeon in Daly? I mean, I know he's, you know, saturating the airways on a national level and local level, and that's helping. But does he have any sort of budget plan in place? Does he have anything besides his name that he's running on?
I just think you should go, when you're thinking about any of these people, you should go back in time and look at their history. You look at the history of the Daly clan, what do you see? If I can't help my son, you can kiss my mistletoe. I think that's where it starts. The old man said it, and it really didn't change much. I'm not saying that these people are evil or that they're corrupt. But I'm saying that they come from a corrupt system, and I don't see how you can really expect change if you bring someone in from that system who are vested in that system. I mean, they'll tell you what you want to know, Amy. They'll talk to you about feral cat recovery.
Yeah.
You know, they'll talk. Yeah. They'll give you a feral cat plan.
That's what I'm running on when I'm running for
mayor. Yeah.
I'm the queen of cats.
What about on K through 12? There's some school choice friends of mine are saying, you know, why is John being so tough on Gary Chico? He's a strong proponent of school choice. Now, I don't think he's the only one, but he's one of the few in the race, and perhaps he's the best positioned to win and to have somebody in the on the fifth floor who's a school choice proponent. So no moratorium on charters, and he'll fight Pritzker if he tries to eliminate the tax credit scholarships. Is that enough to reconsider Gary Chico's history in the Daly administration and at Ed Burke's right hand?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to hold it against Gary Chico that he came up. He didn't come up with a silver spoon in his mouth. He came up on the South Side, like, you know, like I did. I'm from the same similar neighborhoods. He had to climb up the way he had to given the power structure that was around him. So Burke was the guy, was the man in that area, and he wrote it. But that doesn't mean when you're a lawyer and chairman of the school board, if you abstain hundreds of times from votes that your business is involved in, I wonder if there should be some consideration. There should be some, I don't know, step back and think about what all this means, but I just don't think that there is that kind of reflection in town, and I think some of it has to do with the fact that the media is in such bad shape. There's fewer people covering the races, and then you have, you know, a lot of people on broadcast, present company accepted, who I think are just
they're there because they're lightweights. They don't know the history of this city, and they're on TV because they want to be on TV. They don't care about the stories. I mean, I saw somebody take a selfie at a double homicide.
You know,
are you kidding me? That person should be fired immediately.
By the way, you know what?
God, it makes me sick.
You know what comedian from Arlington Heights, the great comedian now?
Who?
Sebastian Maniscalchi. You know what he calls a selfie?
What?
A lonely. You're that lonely that you can't even, you don't even have somebody to take a picture of you. I love that.
Nice.
That's a lonely.
I need to ask Amy. May I ask a question,
Amy?
Of
course, sir. Yeah.
Do you know that raccoons pass rabies to their children?
Yes.
You're hanging with raccoons. They're full of rabies.
Yeah.
This whole feral cat thing has got to stop. And the next time I fill in for you, I want that whole studio, I don't know, steam cleaned of cat hair.
Some of my cat
it's
hair
crazy,
is,
man.
Yeah, it is on this chair. Hey, real quick, we wanted to ask you about your health. I know that you had a health scare, and people
were
very concerned. So what's going on? What happened?
You were on me, I remember, years ago telling me to get on the Peloton or whatever bike, and I'm feeling better. Had a health scare, and I lost some weight, and I gotta just get smart, you know, and eat right and do what I have to do.
Good. Well, are you doing, how much weight have you lost, or is this personal?
I'm down about 20 some pounds.
Oh, that's awesome.
Don't
you feel better?
I went cold turkey on the cigarettes at the same time, so no carbs, no nicotine. Basically, people don't want to be around me on deadline because I do want to kill people.
You're a little jumpy.
It's all right. You'll get over this.
No.
I'm proud of you. That's a huge accomplishment, John.
Now, has anybody noticed that you've lost 20 pounds?
I guess if I want to walk around when I'm at the office, if I, you know, show them my suspenders and brag like that.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah, sure. No, I get it. Hey, I want to
look at this. You know?
Yes.
Staff.
We're long live John Cass. We're all glad
we're so
to hear
that. So proud of you.
We'll
get you a massage at an Asian parlor.
Yeah, Danny Solis has some recommendations. So here's I want to go back to the media thing that you mentioned though.
Yeah.
Before we get to Danny Solis's musings, this is from Jeff Carter, who writes at the Points and Figures blog. He's a venture capitalist guy. He writes about Chicago, saying, "Here's the problem." Well, first of all, he talks about the University of Chicago's Institute for Justice, free legal work for entrepreneurs who try to start businesses in Chicago. But here's the problem: the media refuses to cover the endemic corruption at City Hall that impedes the capital formation, business creation, job and job development. The media refuses to cover it. They refuse to cover it straight up. It should be on the radio, television, the papers, front and center each day, every day, 24/7. Instead, they go along and help cover it up. They try to show that it's isolated rather than a systemic and systematic way of doing business. Now, he exempts you, Kristen McQueary, me and Amy and Mark Lennon at Wire Points from the media that don't cover this. But what about his point that the vast majority of the Chicago press corps is really in bed and does the bidding for big government, even this feudal, corrupt system of big government?
Well, I disagree in this sense. Without the Chicago Tribune, you wouldn't know that Mike Madigan locked up most of the downtown real estate in the city. So the Tribune and the Sun-Times, to some extent, do reporting like this. I think what he's referring to, at least I hope he's referring, is the broadcast media, particularly those who consider themselves grizzled political reporters.
Sure.
The ones who just always defer to power, always. I've only been doing this 35 years. And you know it too, Dan, and you do too, Amy. There's a certain butt-kissing going on in broadcast, oh, yeah. And it's not done on WIND, not on The Morning Answer, clearly. But it's done elsewhere. If you get the candidate on, you're so happy to get him on that you don't ask the tough questions. And when Bill Daley can go around talking about being a reformer, it makes me laugh. I mean, I remember when his brother floated a move to reduce the city council to 20. And I walked into his office. I said, "What's this about?" And he said, "Fewer aldermen, more control." Mm-hmm. You get it? And I'm like, "Yes, Mayor, I get it."
Wow. Now, speaking, I know we just touched on Danny Solis. Is there anybody there at the
Tribune? Hot Stones treatment?
Yeah.
Well, are you guys trying to figure out what massage parlor and find out who his masseuse was?
I didn't hear
call
that last
TMZ?
Part, Amy.
No, you're trying to find his masseuse, the lady that gave him an alleged happy.
Yeah, he wanted the happy ending, right?
Yeah.
Nice ending is the
No, he said nice.
Nice ending.
A nice ending.
Nice
that
ending.
So sweet.
Yeah.
Do men really?
Yeah,
do
I don't really care.
Okay.
His ethnic predilections. You know, whether he likes tall women, short.
He likes tall women.
Latinos, Europeans, or Asians. I think he likes Asian women, right? But
right.
I don't really care.
There's the question from this week's revelations, per that FBI affidavit that was filed. It's not so much about Solis, of course. It's about Mike Madigan, since an interaction was part of what the FBI has obtained through surreptitious activity. The question is, do you think with, the 18,000 conversations they have of Solis and the 9,500 conversations they have of Burke, is this the beginning of the end of Mike Madigan?
If it is, then you're going to see the Democratic Party as Yugoslavia after Tito. Because that's one thing to consider. I mean, he's held these tribes together if he goes. And I do think that this is a move. Post-Governor McConnell in Virginia, as a lawyer, you know that the case in the criminal case against the governor of Virginia was set aside by the Supreme Court because Justice Roberts, in his wisdom or lack of it, thought that when you do corrupt acts, you have to say something like, hey, I'm going to do this corrupt act, and will you help me? And then I'll give you a coat or a bribe.
Right.
It never works like that. People don't talk like that. But even given that, the federal government seems to have altered and shaped its approach post-McConnell in order to look at Madigan. And Madigan is, to me, the big story, as you pointed out. He's the big fish here.
And the fact that the FBI included that in their affidavit, where no one has been charged related to that meeting at this point, you know, that's different than some of their filings with respect to Burke, of course, who has been charged. Oh, what does that tell you? I mean, are they trying to telegraph something?
Yes, of course they are. I mean, they're not. They don't, things aren't put in these affidavits by accident. And first, we don't know how far they go with Madigan. We don't know how many other aldermen have been wired up. We don't know how many times people have had to go down to the grand jury from the mayor of Chicago on down. We don't know. There's a lot we don't know. And this story will continue to give.
Yes.
You know, but right now, it's, to me, the main thrust of it is the culture of corruption is front and center. 4 weeks from the mayor's race, and you've talked about it. You were just talking about it this morning. The sort of soft, passive nature of the people of Chicago and the people that slap them in the mouth every couple years. It goes on and on.
He is John Cass, Chicago Tribune columnist, of course. John, thanks so much for joining us, providing your insights as always. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Keep up that weight loss and keep up not smoking. That's awesome.
We're gonna race on the Peloton as soon as I get mine.
Okay.
Amy, I'm gonna get on a bike and send you a video. I'm starting to look really good.
I love it.
I'm gonna wear Lululemon pants when I do it now.
Oh, perfect. That's perfect. Then maybe move on to Athleta. But you know what?
All right.
Yeah, and your complexion's gonna get better. Everything, you're gonna feel better. Everything's looking up for John Cass, who joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy, love is a many splendor thing. Comes in a lot of different forms, Amy.
Oh, yeah.
Yuma Shinohara fell in love with a cockroach called Lisa.
I love you, Lisa.
I'm
love at first sight. Oh, Lisa, please. Fall on me.
This is not some pejorative against a woman named Lisa. This is the actual insect. He fantasized about them having sex. He imagined in a world in which they could consummate their love either by him being shrugged to insect size or Lisa being Kafka-esque, expanded to human size.
Oh, my gosh.
He said that no human girl was as hot as Lisa.
Oh, my God. You know why she was so hot? Because she couldn't talk. Hey-o!
Wow. And, you know, you think, well, this is a love that's going to last till the end of time, because cockroaches, right? Nuclear winter, Keith Richards, and cockroaches.
They survive everything.
But, unfortunately, Lisa passed away.
Oh, no! Did somebody step on Lisa? What happened to Lisa?
Yeah.
Dan, was it the cold? Was it the sub-zero temperature?
No, he's in Japan.
The wind chill.
Yuma is an entomophagist, which means he advocates and practices eating insects as an alternative to meat for environmental reasons. So he ate Lisa.
He wanted her inside of him. Oh!
He will carry her with him forever. And you would think, well, Yuma Shinohara of Japan must be the loneliest guy in the world. And you'd be wrong. That's Ashton Kutcher. Ashton Kutcher tweeted out, I miss having a real connection with real people. From now on, you can just text me. And so he put his cell phone number on Twitter.
Oh, he must have been drunk. He did go to University of Iowa. He's hot.
Best Ashton Kutcher movie. Sort of like asking what's the tallest skyscraper in Wichita.
The Ranch. He's in The Ranch now on Netflix. That's pretty funny. Have you watched that?
No.
Oh, you should. It's about a Republican family. It's funny.
The only Ashton Kutcher Elliot's movie that I can think of that was any good, well, of course, was not him trying to be funny, and I do mean trying, Butterfly Effect.
Hmm.
And Dude, Where's My Car? Another cinematic classic.
All right, well, we'll call Ashton Kutcher in the...
Or text him.
Next, or we'll text,
text
him.
Text him.
Just say, hey, you're not alone, man.
Yeah.
We got your back.
Let's have a real connection with Ashton Kutcher.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And so this case of the Empire star who was allegedly assaulted. A couple of developments yesterday, including a video snapshot of two silhouettes that were in the vicinity around the time that Jussie says he was attacked.
Yeah, and police said that they tracked Smollett's movements that night. And so they confirmed that the video shows Smollett walking across the street from those two possible persons of interest. But then police said in the video, he walks out of frame for about 1 minute, then suddenly reappears on camera wearing a rope like a necktie. Not a noose, but just a rope that was tied up like, you know, how you guys wear your ties.
He was apparently on the phone with his business manager when the attack happened. The business manager says he heard somebody say, make a racial epithet. Then he went to his manager's condo or apartment after the attack, went past the doorman, and that's when they called police, and police responded at that time. Now, he won't provide his cell phone to police to confirm the story.
And the manager won't either.
Right, so they're just
that's a problem.
They're just offering statements. The other thing, as we mentioned yesterday, according to the police report, 40 minutes after they called, the police responded to the apartment
of the manager. Yeah.
And Jussie is still wearing the makeshift noose. We don't know if any, if there's been any corroboration of the assertion that there was some chemical that was thrown on him.
Yeah, well, they've taken the noose and his sweatshirt that he was wearing, which, by the way, had a salt stain on it. Not his coat, but his sweatshirt. They've taken both of those in for a separate investigation. They're going to go through that and see if they can lift any prints and see if there's any bleach on the sweatshirt or what alleged possible substance might be on it.
And remember, the other allegation made in the second conversation with police, not the first.
Yeah, remember, not the first time he was interviewed by police.
Is that the assailants exclaimed, "This is MAGA country," when they attacked him. So I know what you're thinking. You're thinking along
the
lines.
Where were you, Dan?
Well, no, I got an alibi. And I wouldn't do anything like
that,
obviously. But the other thing you're thinking is, what would Maxine Waters have to say about this, obviously? Because you want to be on the side of right. So No Justice, No Peace, Maxine, has weighed in on this. And if you're thinking along with Maxine, you know where this goes. This is all Trump's fault.
I know Jussie. I love him. His family is a friend of mine. I know his sisters. I met his mom. And I called already to Jazz, one of the sisters, to talk to her about what's happening, what's going on. So she said he's okay. He's out of the hospital. And, you know, we didn't talk about it much more than that. But I was on my way to Chicago to see about him. You know what I'm saying? I love him. He's a fantastic human being. He's so giving. He shows up at all the community events. You know, he does a lot working with the community. But he comes from that kind of family. And so I'm pleased that he's doing okay. But we have to understand this is happening for a reason. Why all of a sudden do we have people unable to study while black? Unable to mow a lawn while black? Unable to have a picnic while black and being attacked? It's coming from the President of the United States. Mm. He's dog whistling every day. He's separating and dividing. And he is basically emboldening those folks who feel this way, maybe never said it, never talked about it, never could act it out, but now they're on it. And when I heard about what had happened to Jussie, and I heard they put a rope around him and they poured bleach on him and stuff, I was absolutely very upset. So I'm feeling better that he's okay, and I'm looking forward to seeing him.
Now, President Trump has not been named a suspect in this assault yet, but we haven't made out the individuals, the two silhouettes in that freeze frame of a video. So we'll see. For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by Paul Hubel. He is a former Chicago police officer, now a licensed private investigator. He's also done a bit of investigative journalism work, and he's out in L.A. now, got out of Chicago. He is Paul Hubel, as I mentioned. Paul, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. Do we have Paul?
No, we have Paul.
Okay.
We just talked to Paul. Where's Paul?
Go ahead and put him on the air then. Technical tape. Ah, there's Paul. Paul?
I'm having a hard time hearing.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
The volume kind of dropped, but.
Okay.
Speak loud.
Okay, Paul. So you have followed this case of the alleged assault of Mr. Smollett. What's your reaction? Where does this investigation go with 12 Chicago police detectives assigned to it?
Well, I think that this is a very troubled young man. Let me begin by saying that when I was in Chicago, I lived at Marina City, which is right there in the area where this was alleged to have happened. That's number one. Number two, my Chicago police buddies that are close to the rank and file that were covering this thing or investigating it, this case had a strong odor to them that it was a publicity stunt because of the absolute lack of meaningful evidence other than what they were told. They looked at miles of video footage, and there really is nothing that shows that he was in any kind of a conflict with anyone, period. And, you know, well, there was what looks to me like a couple, a man and a woman, in the photographs, the shadowy figures. The person on the right has rounded shoulders and really has the appearance and gait of a woman. And they're certainly not wearing red Trump caps or anything like that. And then WLS, they released a graphic that says that he's out of frame for a minute. And all these things that were alleged could not happen in a minute. This is, as far as I can determine, the only thing that makes sense is this is a twisted publicity stunt. And being out in L.A., I have been watching the entertainment community just falling all over each other, decrying this deplorable attack, and, you know, like it really happened. But the other thing, too, I'm noticing is that the mainstream media who embrace this thing in the very beginning, like it really happened, are now using words like alleged attack, and they're backing off. But again, this thing has a strong odor. And more importantly, the temperature in Chicago at that particular time is not conducive to troublemakers being out wandering around. And the other thing that I've been told by officers is that they believe that Jesse was actually out trying to score drugs at that hour of the morning, and that was really why he was out, because it really doesn't make any sense for him to be out in that kind of a weather. You know, it's different if he had to work, he's driving a cab,
well,
but he's not.
Well, okay, but
he did go to a Subway shop because he said he was hungry.
Yeah, right. So there's video of him at the Subway sandwich shop, and also, I mean, I know this is hearsay from your discussion with Chicago police officers, I understand it, but there's no evidence to suggest that at this point, so we sort of want to stick where the evidence is. There's no evidence that he was buying drugs. There's at least nothing that's been released by police.
Well, it was basically conjecture. In other words, they're trying to figure out what is he doing out there And maybe that subway was a meeting point for something to happen. One thing's for sure is there may or may not be a drug screen on him if he actually went to the hospital. Because certainly the doctors would be wondering about that, if he's having a psychotic event or, you know, who knows. But, you know, they're going to look at it very carefully, or they should.
Well, let's talk about his past tweets. They've been very anti-Trump, and, I mean, they're so vulgar, we can't even read them on the air.
They're despicable. I mean, he's a Trump hater. And the other thing too that's very disturbing was this so-called statement, "This is MAGA country," wasn't made to the police. It was made by him to TMZ in an apparent effort to trump up publicity. And then the cops wind up calling him back, and then he says, "Oh yeah, that happened. I forgot to tell you." Well, that really, again, has an odor to it. This young man really, I think, needs some serious counseling. I mean, he's way over the edge.
Well, if it is true that this was some sort of hoax, or it was not what it appeared to be, I mean, he might have gotten into some sort of fracas, but it had nothing to do with two men, mass men, and saying something related to Trump and so on and so forth. What do you think Chicago police do on this? If they don't find any suspects that fit the description and can prove that they committed the crime the way Jesse lays it out, and that he was less than honest, do they just make this go away, or do they actually pursue him for filing a false police report?
Well, Chicago has really changed. And they're very sensitive to any kind of racial issues. And I think that the powers that be are going to try to walk away from this. But certainly in my day, he'd be wearing bracelets. And, you know, they would have conducted a much more intense interrogation of him, suggesting that he take a polygraph test and things like that. But that's not going to happen now, at least I don't believe so. And they're going to want this thing, the Chicago Police Department is going to want to make this whole thing go away. And, you know, but realistically, if they sit down with this kid, do their job, he's going to wind up telling us that, yeah, he was a little over the edge and got carried away, because that's what happens in these types of interrogations or interviews, and then he'll justify it, mitigate it, and that's fine. But filing a false police report or pulling a fire alarm is really the same thing. You don't do that. You don't cause first responders to go out and do these massive investigations. And I can't imagine what it costs the city to look at all that video footage that showed absolutely nothing.
Well, it never showed an attack, and that is the bottom line. I mean, there's cameras all over the place down there, and there was nothing. I mean, I don't know how they could have gone off camera and within a minute and had an attack happen. So,
I don't know. The whole thing is disgraceful. Jesse's tweets speak for themselves. They're very vile and hateful. And this is a very troubled young man. I mean, it's obvious. And on Saturday in West Hollywood, which is, of course, the gay capital of Southern California, they're having a big demonstration before Jesse makes some kind of an appearance here.
With respect to your conversation with Chicago police, is there anybody who said, you know, sort of, we don't know? There's some indications that this could be misleading at best and a hoax at worst. But there's also the possibility. There's the possibility that what he's saying is true, that it could have happened. Do you hear that from anybody inside the police department?
Nobody, except, however, the The higher up you go within the department, you get to the PR section, public relations, PIOs, they're going to be very sensitive because of the racial tones here, that they're going to pretend to at least tell everybody that they kind of believe this kid. And again, they're going to want this thing to go away. It's a black eye. It's divisive. It's horrible.
And again, I believe something happened, but not as he says it happened.
Yeah, something did happen.
Something did, yeah.
And he had a dispute with somebody. And again, you know, going back to the conjecture of sworn officers on the scene, they believe that he got into some kind of tussle with a potential drug dealer or someone else, and it happened earlier than what he claimed happened, where there's absolutely no evidence.
He is Paul Hubel, licensed private detective. He's a former Chicago police officer and investigative journalist as well out in L.A. Paul, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, you guys have a great day and try to keep warm. It'll be about 70 degrees where I'm at.
All right, try to keep warm, too. All right, thanks, Paul.
And he joined us on a turnkey.pro answer line.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.